Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
Greetings and welcome to ID the Future. On this fourth installment of a critique of nature's evolutionary gems packet, we're going to discuss some of nature's macroevolutionary gems. Having now addressed all of the microevolutionary or even non-evolutionary gems from nature's evolution evangelism packet, let's turn our attention to some of the gems that led off their packet. Arguably, 12 of the 15 evolutionary gems had nothing to do with macroevolution. But the very first gem was whale evolution, where the packet claims that there are numerous fossils from the first 10 million years or so of whale evolution. This is odd since whale expert Philip Gingrich has admitted that there are merely, quote, fossils illustrating three or four steps that bridge the precursor of whales to today's mammals, unquote. The Nature packet recites the standard fossils, which are nearly always given as alleged evidence of transitional forms between land mammals and whales. However, something very important is missing from their analysis. In fact, we must not miss their comment about the first 10 million years of whale evolution. In fact, let's grant for the sake of argument that some of these alleged intermediate fossils do have characteristics that appear intermediate between the features of land mammals and whales. Have Darwinian paleontologists made their case? The fossil record requires that the evolution of whales from small land mammals took place in less than 10 million years. That may sound like a long time, but think about this for a moment. According to the paper, whales with all their complex adaptations for aquatic life supposedly evolved from something like a mouse deer-like animal into a full-fledged whale in less than 10 million years. Whales have a long generation time, meaning that there were perhaps only a few million generations at best to allow for the changes to add up. If they had a generation time of as short as 5 years, then Haldane's dilemma predicts that only a few thousand mutations could become fixed into an evolving population during that time. In other words, the fossil record permits dramatically insufficient time to convert a land mammal into a full-fledged aquatic whale. Nature gives only praise for the whale series, showing no appreciation for the mathematical difficulties of evolving a whale in so few generations. But the packet really starts to evangelize for evolution when it gets into the topic of the evolution of feathers. Discussing feathered dinosaurs, it states, quote, "The discovery of feathered dinosaurs not only vindicated the idea of transitional forms, but also showed that evolution is a way of coming up with a dazzling variety of solutions when we had no idea that there were even problems. Flight could have been no more than an additional opportunity that presented itself to creatures already clothed in feathers," unquote. Aside from the fact that this kind of an argument turns flight into a mere byproduct of natural selection, even though it's a highly complex behavior that requires numerous specialized features, the main example of a feathered dinosaur in this packet highlights the problem with many of these claimed feathered dinosaurs. Unmentioned by Nature's packet is the fact that the original paper on this fossil contains language hinting that it might be, quote, "interpreted as secondarily flightless," unquote. Well, what does that mean? That means that it wasn't a feathered dinosaur. In fact, it wasn't a dinosaur at all. It was a bird that lost its ability to fly, much like many birds known from the present day. In fact, various authorities support such interpretation of these fossils. Bird evolution expert Alan Fiducia believes that Caudipteryx and Protoarchaeopteryx, two alleged feathered dinosaurs, are replete with features of secondarily flightless birds. Likewise, a 2000 Nature paper suggested that, quote, "Caudipteryx was a secondarily flightless post-Archaeopteryx cursorial bird," unquote, because it is, quote, "a striking coincidence that the only unambiguously feathered theropod was also the only known theropod likely to have utilized locomotory mechanisms identical to those of cursorial birds," unquote. Somehow that Nature paper didn't make it into Nature's evolution evangelism packet. After all, secondarily flightless birds are a lot less impressive than feathered dinosaurs when you're trying to make a case for evolution. So there's no mention of this dissenting viewpoint in the Nature packet. Finally, the last macroevolutionary gem, or what I might call a lump of coal, is Tiktaalik, a fossil said to be a transitional form between fish and amphibians. The packet states, quote, "The discovery and painstaking analysis of Tiktaalik illuminates the stage before tetrapods evolved," unquote. That was printed in 2009, but how defensible is that statement in 2010? In January 2010, new evidence of tracks of full tetrapods before Tiktaalik refute the claim that known specimens of Tiktaalik directly document, as the packet implies, the stage before tetrapods evolved. To understand the implication of these tracks, in January 2010, Nature reported that tetrapod tracks that are 397 million years old, quote, lob a grenade, unquote, into the conventional picture of tetrapod evolution. It's stated that the tracks predate the oldest tetrapod skeletal remains by at least 18 million years, and in fact the earliest alleged fish ancestors of tetrapods by about 10 million years. As a Nature News article stated, quote, the oldest tracks of a four-limbed land animal could rewrite a part of vertebrate evolution. Some prints showing individual digits were found in limestone slabs unearthed in a quarry near Zakelmi, Poland, dated to about 395 million years ago, more than 18 million years before tetrapods were thought to have evolved. The tracks suggest that animals that made them were up to 2.5 meters long and had a footpad up to 26 centimeters wide, although most prints were about 15 centimeters wide, reports a team of Polish and Swedish scientists in Nature this week. This would mean that large land-roaming tetrapods would have coexisted for 10 million years with the Elpostostegids, including Tiktaalik rosae, which lived 375 million years ago, a thought to mark the transition from fish to land-roaming animals, unquote. Simply put, these tracks suggest that tetrapods predated Tiktaalik, and thus Tiktaalik is not, as Nature put it elsewhere, a, quote, direct transitional form, unquote, between fish and tetrapods. Before going further, I must note that the term transitional form is generally used in two different ways. The soft definition of transitional implies that an organism merely needs to bear features that are representative of a potential intermediate, even if the fossil itself could not have been a direct transitional form. Under the hard definition of transitional form, a stronger claim is made that this organism actually was a real-life lineal intermediate between two taxa, a direct transitional form. As evidence that this soft-hard distinction is used, when the early tetrapod tracks were first reported in January 2010, Nature's editor's summary said that, quote, the find suggests that the Elpostostegids that we know were late surviving relics rather than direct transitional forms, that they highlight just how little we know of the earliest history of land vertebrates, unquote. Usage of the term direct transitional form shows that a hard meaning of transitional form exists and that these tetrapod tracks suggest that Tiktaalik did not meet that hard definition. Though with Tiktaalik, we haven't just seen arguments for its transitional nature based upon the soft definition of transitional forms. What has made Darwin's promoters so excited about Tiktaalik is the claim that its placement in the fossil record directly before the first known tetrapods and after certain fish groups allegedly ancestral to tetrapods makes it a direct transitional form in the hard sense. In fact, evolutionists have boasted greatly about the purported claim that Tiktaalik is an example of a fossil that meets the hard definition of a transitional form. Badly needing examples of hard transitional forms, many evolutionists have placed great rhetorical weight upon the stratigraphic location of Tiktaalik in the fossil record, claiming that it was a prediction of neo-Darwinian evolution. Here are some noteworthy examples. First, Tiktaalik's official website, that's right, it's called tiktaalik.uchicago.edu, claims that Tiktaalik's placement in the fossil record was predicted by common sense, leading to another affirmation of our theory. Second, in his book Why Evolution is True, University of Chicago evolutionary biologist Jerry Coyne hails the discovery of Tiktaalik and its placement in the fossil record in similarly triumphant terms. Coyne couldn't have laid out this fulfilled prediction of evolutionary biology any clearer. He states, quote, one of the greatest fulfilled predictions of evolutionary biology is the discovery in 2004 that a transitional form between fish and amphibians. This is the fossil species Tiktaalik rosae, which tells us a lot about how vertebrates claim to live on the land. Its discovery is a stunning vindication of the theory of evolution. This is where the prediction comes in. If there were lobe-finned fish but no terrestrial vertebrates 390 million years ago, and clearly terrestrial vertebrates from 360 million years ago, where would you expect to find transitional forms? Somewhere in between. Following this logic, Shubin predicted that if transitional forms existed, their fossils would be found in strata around 375 million years old. Equally marvelous is that Tiktaalik's discovery was not only anticipated, but predicted to occur in rocks of a certain age and in a certain place, unquote. Third, during the rhetorical climax of PBS Nova's Judgment Day Intelligent Design on Trial documentary, Tiktaalik co-discoverer Neil Shubin likewise claimed that the stratigraphic placement of Tiktaalik fulfills specific predictions of neo-Darwinian theory. Here's what Shubin says, quote, what evolution enables us to do is to make specific predictions about what we should find in the fossil record. The prediction in this case is clear-cut. That is, if we go to rocks of the right age and rocks of the right type, we should find transitions between two great forms of life, between fish and amphibians. What we see when we look at the fossil record at rocks of just the right age is a creature like Tiktaalik, unquote. Fourth, likewise, The U.S. National Academy of Sciences 2008 booklet, Science, Evolution, and Creationism, focused on Tiktaalik's placement in the fossil record as one of its primary arguments for evolution. It states, quote, "The team that discovered the new fossil decided to focus on far northern Canada when they noticed in a textbook that the region contained sedimentary rock deposited about 375 million years ago, just when shallow water fishes were predicted by evolutionary science to be making the transition to land. A prediction from more than a century of findings from evolutionary biology suggests that one of the early species that emerged from the Earth's oceans about 375 million years ago was the ancestor of amphibians, reptiles, dinosaurs, birds, and mammals. The discovery of Tiktaalik strongly supports this prediction," unquote. The NAS apparently feels so strongly that the just when of Tiktaalik confirmed a prediction of evolutionary science that it presents its material on the very first pages of its 70-page booklet promoting evolution. Later, the NAS booklet again reiterates this confirmed prediction in a section explaining why evolutionary theory is, quote, both theory and fact. It states, quote, "The evolutionary biologists who discovered Tiktaalik predicted that they would find fossil intermediates between fish and limb terrestrial animals and sediments that were about 375 million years old. Their discovery confirmed the prediction made on the basis of evolutionary theory. In turn, confirmation of a prediction increases confidence in the theory," unquote. So with rhetorical guns blazing, the NAS made Tiktaalik's placement in the fossil record one of its central arguments for evolution. No wonder Time magazine stated that Tiktaalik has become the Darwin lobby's, quote, exhibit A in their long-running debate with creationists and other anti-evolutionists. Or that the New York Times quoted paleontologists saying Tiktaalik, quote, might in time become as much an evolutionary icon as the protobird Archaeopteryx bridged the gap between reptiles and today's birds, unquote. But did Tiktaalik really bridge that gap? Well, as a final example, in his book on Tiktaalik, Your Inner Fish, University of Chicago paleontologist and lead Tiktaalik researcher Neil Shubin praises Tiktaalik's placement in the fossil record as having confirmed a prediction of paleontology. He states, quote, "It took us 6 years to find Tiktaalik, but this fossil confirmed a prediction of paleontology. Not only was this new fish an intermediate between two different kinds of animal, we had found it also in the right time period in Earth's history and in the right ancient environment. The answer came from 375 million year rocks formed in ancient streams," unquote. It appears evident that leading evolutionary scientists have invested heavily in Tiktaalik's stratigraphic and temporal placement in the fossil record as an argument for their cause. They have claimed it fulfills a specific prediction of evolution. But what if new evidence arises that challenges the view that 375 million years ago is the right time period in Earth's history to find organisms making the transition from water to land? Should we expect that Darwin's loudest defenders will admit their specific prediction was wrong, or will emotions run high and keep us from constructive conversation? Well, a few, though only a few, evolutionists acknowledge the collapse of this prediction. Nature editor Henry G. acknowledged on his Nature blog that the early tetrapod tracks mean, quote, that this neatly gift-wrapped correlation between stratigraphy and phylogeny, in which Alpistostegids represent a transitional form in the swift evolution of tetrapods in the mid-Frasnian, is a cruel illusion. If, as the Polish footprints show, tetrapods already existed in the Eifelian, then an enormous evolutionary void has opened beneath our feet, unquote. G's comments, which were buried in an obscure blog at Nature, understood the great rhetorical weight his camp had placed on Tiktaalik's stratigraphic placement in the fossil record. He tried to deflect the collapse of this neatly gift-wrapped correlation between stratigraphy and phylogeny, stating, quote, "Note, the first person to find any part of this post-quote mind in support of creationism will receive the highly prestigious and coveted order of the unicycling giraffe," unquote. The truth, however, is that new scientific discoveries are exciting because they force us to revise, rethink, and improve our scientific explanations. In fact, neo-Darwinian evolution is certainly not refuted by these newly discovered tetrapod tracks. However, it's clear that evolutionary thinking has led some researchers to make a prediction here. They claim this prediction was a great confirmation of evolutionary theory, but this prediction is now known to be false. Neo-Darwinism lost an important argument. Thus, as I wrote in January 2010, quote, "This week, Tiktaalik's status as an actual transitional form between fish and tetrapods has been called into question by the discovery of unambiguous footprints with digits of a full tetrapod that were made about 20 million years before Tiktaalik," unquote. My original post provoked some spirited responses from Darwin defenders like P.Z. Myers, Daryl Falk, and Josh Rosenau. Their rebuttals made the usual charges of ignorance and incompetence. Namely, they charged that I don't understand that being a transitional form doesn't require that the fossil actually be found between the fossil's alleged ancestors and descendants. In other words, a transitional form need not be a direct transitional form. Accompanying this was the charge that I am ignorant of the fact that known fossils may not necessarily mark the actual stratigraphic range of a fossil's taxa. I get it. I really do. If one defines transitional form soft enough, such that its temporal placement no longer matters, then it becomes very difficult to disprove claims that a fossil was transitional. And new fossil discoveries are constantly extending the known ranges of taxa. I took plenty of evolutionary biology and earth sciences at one of the top secular sciences universities in the country. And so this is basic stuff that everyone learns in lower division courses. This is all old news to me. So what's really going on here? It's my sense that some Darwin defenders were unaware of the great rhetorical weight placed by others on Tiktaalik's placement in the fossil record. This plausible deniability allowed them to bash Darwin critics who observed that the claimed predictions about Tiktaalik's stratigraphic location were wrong. These evolutionary biologists were unaware of their own side's arguments. The problem for my critics is that other Darwin defenders were attempting to make a different, much stronger argument for Tiktaalik based upon Tiktaalik's placement in the fossil record. As I documented, they were arguing that Tiktaalik's temporal location places it in a position where it could be a direct ancestor of tetrapods, and this was a confirmed prediction of evolution. They were making an argument for Tiktaalik's transitional nature based on the hard definition of transitional form. Evolutionists are welcome to revise their theory, but they are not welcome to revise the history of their theory. They should acknowledge that some widely and forcefully promulgated arguments for evolution based upon Tiktaalik turned out to be wrong. In sum, when a widely touted prediction of evolution falls apart, evolutionists often rewrite history, soften the prediction, and claim that the harder prediction was never made in the first place. They also attack those who talk about the failure of this prediction as being ignorant of the true claims of evolution. This is known as moving the goalposts. In this case, my critics cannot escape history and were left with the following point. First, it seems clear that leading evolutionary biologists argued that the known ranges of tetrapods and lobe-finned fishes led them to predict that a fossil-like Tiktaalik would be found in a particular stratigraphic location in the fossil record. When that alleged transitional form was found in that location, they touted it as a confirmed prediction of evolutionary science. Second, some evolutionary scientists apparently didn't realize that many leading Darwin lobbyists had argued that Tiktaalik was found in rocks of just the right age and thus confirmed a specific prediction of neo-Darwinism that made Tiktaalik directly transitional. Third, when a Darwin critic who realizes the rhetorical importance Darwin lobbyists have placed on Tiktaalik's placement in the fossil record points out that this prediction is challenged by new data, Darwin's defenders respond by claiming that no one made that prediction in the first place and levying various amounts of name-calling and allegations of ignorance against that critic. The reality is that just like me, evolutionary biologists understand their theory perfectly well, but they often use slippery definitions of terms to push their theory harder than the evidence allows, and then fall back to weaker arguments when the data contradicts those positions. This is a rhetorical strategy, and sadly, those who are willing to call them on it are subjected to ridicule and name-calling. My approach is not to respond in kind and not to return name-calling with name-calling, but to just continue to talk about the evidence. For more documentation of exactly what happened in this episode, visit evolutionnews.org. I'm Casey Luskin. Thanks for listening to ID the Future podcast.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute 2010. For more information, visit www.intelligentdesign.org or www.idthefuture.com.